You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It's Tuesday, November 28th, and we're talking some Cubs baseball. We bring in MLB.com columnist Richard Justice. Richard, thanks as always for taking some time with us here today. And the Cubs with some changes. We'll start right there on their coaching staff for next season, including a new pitching coach, Jim Hickey, reunited with Joe Maddon. They were together with the Rays for 8 seasons. So Hickey replacing Chris Bosio. What can you tell us about Hickey and what type of changes maybe that the Cubs will be undergoing with their pitching staff?
Well, you know, I think part of it is having a new voice. Chris Bosio did a great job as the Cubs pitching coach. He's a very smart guy. He's a tough guy. He had a great communication skills with pitchers. So I think this was a chance for Joe Maddon to just get a different voice, and sometimes you need that. I think any general manager will tell you that there is a life expectancy to each guy. Now, here's what I can tell you about Jim Hickey. First of all, I'm not sure this is important, but he's one of the funniest human beings you will ever meet in your life.
That's very important. I like that.
Yeah. He is a very smart guy. He is very creative. He has a way of communicating with players. He's also, having worked in the Rays organization, he has a comfort level with the data, the analytics, and the ability with analytics. It's not so much absorbing it. It's taking what you feel is necessary, what the pitcher is comfortable with, and translating all those things. So I think in that way he's a guy that Joe is just completely comfortable with. You know, this is going to be a different look for the Cubs coaching staff with Will Venable taking over first base and Brandon Hyde moving from first base to bench coach and things like that. But it begins with, you know, the hitting coach and the pitching coach have an enormous amount of influence over him. I'll tell you a quick story. When the Astros fired Jim, he was driving back to his home in Kissimmee, Florida. He didn't even get out of the state of Texas before job offers came pouring in. And when the Rays dismissed him after this season, he had his choice of about 5, 6, 7 jobs. A bunch of teams wanted him. That's the reputation he has. So, you know, we're going to, when we look at the offseason, we're going to look at pitchers added and, you know, all of that stuff. But this is an impact addition, and the Cubs want a very spirited competition to get Jim Hickey on the staff.
Absolutely, and if sense of humor is important, we know it is with Joe Maddon, then those two will be reunited and get right to work and fit together very well once again, no question there. Obviously, winter meetings a couple weeks away, and it's a little, the calm before the storm right now. No major moves yet in the off season, but Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton, the two moves that seem to be everyone's waiting to happen for those two dominoes to fall, and then we get more into free agency and trades and everything else. But let's focus on the two-way prodigy Ohtani for a moment. He's been linked to many teams, and the Cubs are one of those teams. What's the realistic expectation you think of the Cubs perhaps landing this future star?
Well, he fits in that the Cubs need pitching. And I mean, the idea, Theo Epstein's idea now is to add at least one back-end bullpen guy and two starting pitchers. They've been linked with Alex Cobb. In terms of the bullpen, they haven't ruled out Wade Davis, but you know, there are a lot of bullpen options out there. I don't think they've ruled out Jake Arrieta, but Jake wants to go and see what his price is. They weighed in on Zach Britton. The price was too high there with Baltimore. Brandon Morrow's a name that comes up. So how would Ohtani fit in? I think at the end of the day, my bet is that he's going to go to a team, an American League team, because the option of DHing. I think everybody's still trying to get their minds around, okay, he's going to start on Tuesday, and he's going to have 4 days. And normally the pitchers work pretty hard in those 4 days between. There's some rest, but there's throwing, there's legwork, all of that. And I think everybody's trying to figure out, okay, how is the guy going to get his work in and then pitch? But everybody's committed to doing it. And here's the advantage the Cubs have. They have one of the most creative, innovative, open-minded managers that's ever managed in Joe Maddon. You ask any player that has played for Joe, they like playing. The other part of that is, in Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, the Cubs have two guys at the top of the baseball ops who will be creative and will figure out ways that Ohtani can get his at-bats. You know, it's not the perfect fit because they have Anthony Rizzo at first base, and I don't think anybody thinks that he's going to play the outfield that many times. But we're in unexplored territory in all of this. So I think he has an open mind, and what he's asked teams to do, as you know, is to just give me a proposal on how it worked out. You know, if you're just looking from baseball and endorsements, the Yankees are a perfect baseball fit. They need a DH. They need a starting pitcher. It's a good fit, and also the endorsement opportunities are pretty enormous in New York City. Having said that, the endorsement opportunities are pretty substantial in Chicago too. So I think it's going to come down. It's not going to come down to money. It's going to come down to where Ohtani is most comfortable. And the competition between the Rangers, the Yankees, other teams is going to be very, very fierce. So we'll see. We know this. We know the Cubs are going to add starting pitching, and he is one of the better arms out there.
Yeah, Richard, you mentioned that word comfort. That seems to be an important factor when such high expectations. I remember when Daisuke Matsuzaka came to the Red Sox and the high expectations there, and he had a decent career but didn't totally fulfill the high expectations everyone had for him at that time. With someone like Ohtani, from what you know, what you've read from talking to people, does he seem composed, poised, ready for those type of expectations wherever he goes, especially in a big market?
Yeah, I it's funny when you watch him, or you watch him on video, you watch him walk, you go, yep, that's a star. I mean, he carries himself like a star, and I think part of that, I mean, is the coverage of him has been so intense in Japan that I don't think anything the New York media, the Chicago media, any place is going to throw at him that he's going to be put off by. I don't think it's going to impact him. He is a big deal. And look, he's a game changer because you look at Brendan McKay was the fourth overall pick of the draft last year. The Rays have him both pitching and playing first base and DHing in the minor leagues, and he seemed to do it just fine. It worked. And we always have scouts every year look at prospects and say, they argue, okay, is this guy a pitcher or a hitter? And whenever the guy doesn't make it as a pitcher, you hear a dozen scouts say, well, I tried to tell my guy he should have been an outfielder, all of that. But now we're going to open the door permanently. Once it's open, I think it's going to be open for a long time, especially if it works, that we're going to look at players that have the ability to do that. Brett Eibner was drafted out of Arkansas by the Royals as an outfielder, but he pitched at University of Arkansas. The Dodgers sent him back to the minor leagues this year and said, okay, you're going to learn to pitch too. We're going to save a roster spot. He blew out his elbow, but the plan long term is to do both things. So Ohtani is a game changer, and I just think he is going to be a huge, intriguing star. I've already been thinking about that. Like, wherever he is, when he makes his first appearance, there's going to be a ton of media there. It was not probably even more intense coverage than Darvish, but he seems to be ready for it.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating story. Exciting to see what happens. We're talking with MLB.com columnist Richard Justice. Just going back over to the Cubs a little more, Richard. Obviously, last season, Cubs had a hangover, World Series hangover, maybe part of the year, but then turns it on at the end. They win the NL Central before falling to the eventual NL champion Dodgers in five games. So now in the offseason, how do the Cubs sort of reboot going forward? Jake Arrieta, free agent. He's a Scott Boras client, so we know he's going to command some money there. What's your sense with what Theo Epstein does with Arrieta? Wade Davis, also a free agent, in terms of re-looking at the pitching staff going forward?
Well, the phrase you used, World Series hangover, was perfect because I have a sense, in just talking to people there, that the club, they played 521 games the last 3 years. They won 311, more than any team in baseball, but they've also played more than any team in baseball, and I think they just hit a wall. I mean, you want to play, you want to keep going, but when you have a short off season and then you have another long season, eventually you do hit a wall. The Cubs feel like, okay, we've got Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, Butler, Montgomery. And the other part of that is, and I think this infects free agency, eight of their top 10 prospects, including some are very close to being ready for the major leagues, are pitchers. Their system is flush with pitching. But when you're in a win-now mode and you've got a 20-something team, I think it's been on opening day, Ben Zobrist, if he's in the opening day lineup, will be the only player that's had a 30th birthday. They're still a young team. What they need is at least one starting pitcher. They've been linked to Alex Cobb. We mentioned Ohtani and what he would give them. They have not closed the door on Arrieta. They, like the rest of us, love Wade Davis. They feel like he'd be great, but Wade's going to go out and engage the market. That leads to, do you shop for Jake McGee? Brandon Morrow would make a lot of fit. Their relievers had trouble throwing strikes last year. Brandon Morrow is a strike thrower. Tommy Hunter resurrected his career in Tampa. And then you just go down the list of starting pitchers. Some of the projections have them making a big investment in Yu Darvish. That makes some sense because they have about $40 million to spend. So the focus is exclusively on pitching. There has been speculation, would you trade some of those position players, i.e. Kyle Schwarber? It's a challenge for Joe to work him into the lineup. Would you trade him to get a pitcher? I would bet, knowing Theo and Jed and how they think, I would think they would try to go the free agency route, that when you have a core of young guys the way they do, you want to try to keep them together. But let's just say they're in a great spot. I know their farm system didn't have any of our top 100 prospects at MLB.com, but they are flush with pitching, and their position players are already in the major leagues. They're in a great spot, and I think if you're projecting the NL Central going into 2018, the Cardinals intend to be very aggressive, but you still begin with the Cubs.
And Richard, just to wrap up, one final question for you. A couple former Cubs first-time nominees on the Hall of Fame ballot, pitchers Kerry Wood, Carlos Zambrano. Wood's career, as we know, really hampered by injuries at times. You need 5% of the vote to stay on the ballot. Do those guys stay on? And what's your memory of those two pitchers?
Well, my memory of Kerry Wood is 20 strikeouts against the Astros, and it was one of those days when the Astros were not frustrated at all. They just said, he was better than us. He struck out 266 in the 2003 season, and we thought in Wood and Pryor, the Cubs are going to have a combination that is good enough to anchor the franchise for years. As you mentioned, injuries didn't allow him to do that, and injuries will probably keep him out of the Hall of Fame. But he has some really special memories. My memory of of Carlos Zambrano is a no-hitter against the Astros when they had to play a makeup game after another hurricane in 2007 in Milwaukee, and he was absolutely unhittable at his best. Lance Berkman once told me, he said, when he's going to pitch against us tonight, notice the radar gun in the first inning. If it says 95, we're cooked, because that's not a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. That's a 95-mile-an-hour sinker.
Wow.
So at his best, he won 132 games, handed ERA under 4. He was as good as anybody ever.
Richard, thanks so much for the time. As always, great stuff. Look forward to chatting again soon.
Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Richard Justice, MLB.com columnist. I'm Darwin Zook, and thanks for tuning in to MLB.com Extras.